The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Janice Peary from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Read to Succeed, a program especially for young children. Our first book today is Wait and See by Robert Munsch. On the day of Olivia's birthday, her mother made a big cake and said, "Make a wish and blow out candles." Olivia really liked snow, and even though it was a very hot summer day, she decided to wish for snow. She wanted it to be really deep, so she wished for snow, snow, and more snow. And then she took a deep breath and blew out all the candles. Whew. Her father said, "Well, Olivia, what did you wish for?" And Olivia said, "I wished for snow, snow, and more snow." "Now look next door," her father said. "You can't wish for snow. It's summertime. It doesn't snow in the summertime. This is not going to work." And Olivia said, "Wait and see." When the party was over and the kids were ready to go home, they opened the front door. There was snow at the bottom of the door, snow at the middle of the door, and snow at the top of the door. The whole house was covered with snow. Olivia ran into the kitchen and yelled, "Mommy, Daddy, Mommy, Daddy, Mommy, Daddy, snow, snow, and more snow." The father and the mother said, "Snow in the summertime? This kid is going totally nuts." And then they opened the front door and yelled, "Ah!" And there is snow over their heads. "Olivia, you have to get rid of this. This is entirely too much snow." "Make me another birthday cake," said Olivia. So they made Olivia another birthday cake, and Olivia made a wish. She took a deep breath and blew out the candles. Right away, it started to rain. It rained and it rained, and it washed all the snow away. "Good wish," said her father. "You wished for rain." It rained some more, and the front yard filled up with water. "How much rain did she wish for?" asked her mother. "Olivia," said her father, "did you wish one word?" "No," said Olivia. "Olivia," said her father, "did you wish two words?" "No," said Olivia. "Olivia," said her father, "did you wish three words?" "Yes," said Olivia. "I wished for rain, rain, and more rain." And there it shows the next door neighbors trying to have a cookout, and they're into the water up to their waist. "Oh, no," yelled her mother. Both Olivia's parents ran into the kitchen and made another birthday cake and put candles on the top. And then her mother said, "Now, Olivia, this time just wish for one word, sunshine. That's all, just sunshine." So that's what Olivia did. She wished for sunshine. And then she took a deep breath and blew out the candles. Right away, the sun came out. It got warm, and all the water dried up. The mother and the father went to the front yard and looked around. "This is more like it," said her mother. "Olivia wished for sunshine, just sunshine, just one word." Meanwhile, back in the house, Olivia had made another birthday cake. And then she took a deep breath and blew out the candles. The mother and the father ran in and yelled, "Olivia, did you wish one word?" "No." "Did you wish two words?" "No." "Did you wish three words?" "Yes." "Oh, Olivia, what did you wish for?" "Well," said Olivia, "I wished for money, money, and more money." "Now look," said her father, "money is very hard stuff to get. You can't just wish for money just like that. It's not going to work. Olivia said, wait and see. Just then, a large dump truck drove up and poured into Olivia's front yard an enormous pile of $100 bills. Wow, said Olivia, look at all my birthday money. And then she ran outside with a large garbage bag and started filling it with money. You're too little to have that much money, said her father. It belongs to me. And then he came out with a bigger garbage bag. Oh, no, said her mother. I think the mummy should take care of this money. And she came outside with an enormous garbage bag. The father and the mother got into a big fight over the money. Olivia ran inside and said, wait a minute. I didn't mean for this money to cause an enormous fight. I'm going to make another birthday cake. And so she made a cake, covered it with candles, and made a wish. And then she took a deep breath. And then she blew out the candles. The father and mother heard her blowing out the candles and ran inside. Olivia, said the father, did you wish three words? No. Did you wish two words? No. Did you wish one word? Yes. One word, said her father. Just one word. Well, that is probably all right. What was your wish? Well, said Olivia, I wanted something to make me happy, something to keep me busy, something we all said we wanted, and so I wished for a new baby. Now, wait a minute, said her father. You don't know how these things work. You can't wish for a new baby just like that. It's just not going to work. Wait and see, said Olivia. I don't have to wait, said her mother. When she wished for snow, she got snow. When she wished for rain, she got rain. And when she wished for sunshine, she got sunshine. And then when she wished for money, she got money. Now she wished for a baby. I think we are going to have a baby. This is crazy, said her father. Olivia, take back that wish. Okay, said Olivia. I'll take back that wish. I don't really want a baby anyway. I wanted three. And there's the last picture in the book showing everyone in the family, all three of them, pushing baby strollers. The dad has one baby in his, the mom has another baby in hers, and Olivia has a third baby in hers. Our next book is Thumper Finds an Egg by Laura Driscoll. Thumper is a little gray rabbit with gray fur on his ears and most of his face, on and on his front paws and down his back, with a brown chin and throat and brown tummy and brown back paws, and then a nice white nose and a white fluffy collar and a nice poofy tail on him. He's very cute. Thumper looked around happily. The rain had finally stopped. What had the wind blown into the open? Thumper hopped off to see. Just over the first hill, he saw a silky blue feather. And then he found a pink flower. And down by the river, he spotted something blue. Sniff, sniff, went Thumper with his little nose wiggling. Giggle, giggle, Thumper looked up. All his sisters are watching him. There's four of them on the log. He has found something blue in the grass. What you doing, Thumper? Trixie asked. She had a big, bushy tail and always wanted to know what was going on. treasure hunting, he explained. Look what I found. The bunnies peered at the smooth blue egg. That's pretty. What is it? Tessie asked. She was the youngest bunny. It's a robin's egg, silly, Thumper said. Oh, a birdie, Daisy said excitedly. She loved making new friends. You need to keep it warm and happy until it hatches, Rhea added. She was a smart little bunny. Rustle, rustle. The bunnies gathered grass and leaves and piled them on the egg like a soft, cozy blanket. The bunnies knew the egg needed its mama. So Trixie, Rhea, and Tessie went to find her. Hippity-hop, hippity-hop. Off go those bunnies. How will we keep it happy? Thumper said to Daisy. He thumped his foot. We could sing to it, Daisy offered. Thumper wasn't so sure. Daisy sang anyways. After a while, Daisy ran out of songs, and then she started dancing. And by this time, other animals had come and were seeing what was going on. There are two little ducklings and a turtle and a little brown bird and a chipmunk peeking out of his hole in the tree and a mole coming out of the ground, and there's a beaver poking his head out of the water. Everyone is having fun. Thumper decided the egg might like to see one of his tricks instead. He picked up the feather. And he tickled his little sister, Daisy. Daisy laughed and laughed and laughed some more. And there she is rolling on the ground because Thumper is tickling her with that feather. Papa Bunny hopped up. Thumper, now what did I tell you about tickling your sisters? But it was to keep the egg happy, Thumper said. Just then, Trixie, Tessie and Rhea appeared with a nest of twigs. A mama robin flew right above them. Thumper placed the egg in the nest. The mama robin covered it with her wing. There was a crackle, crackle sound, and soon a baby bird popped out of the shell. Thumper gave Daisy the flower he'd found earlier. Thanks for helping me keep the egg happy. It was fun, she said. Plus, I learned a new trick. And then she picked up that pretty blue feather and started to tickle her brother. This next book is called Pete's Dragon, and it was written especially for Walt Disney's movies. Most people do not understand dragons. They think dragons are all wicked creatures who like to scare people with their fiery breath. Poppycock. Take Elliot the dragon, for instance. He is so kindly and polite that he often becomes invisible just to keep from frightening anyone. And Elliot is a large green dragon with a fat tummy and purple fin things down his back, with pink wings and pink hair, and he always tries to keep a smile on his face. Of course, he wasn't being invisible when he met Pete, but he knew right away that Pete wasn't like other people. Pete thought Elliot's green scales looked just right, and he liked it when Elliot breathed fire. He was a most sensible boy. Now, if Pete was sensible and kind, the terrible Gogan family he lived with were not. They made Pete work from early in the morning until late at night, and they shouted at him a lot, too. At last, Elliot did what any clever dragon would do. He arranged for Pete to run off with him. They ran and they ran until they came to the little seaside town of Passamaquoddy. Elliot became invisible since he didn't want to upset the townspeople. There on the beach near town, they found a fine cave. It was just the proper size for a large dragon and a small boy, and so they moved right in. Of course, it was a trifle damp. Elliot was about to warm it with a blast of his fiery breath when a young woman came hurrying along. She didn't see Elliot because he was invisible, but she did see Pete. "You look cold and hungry," she said to Pete. "My name is Nora. Come along with me to the lighthouse where I live." Pete went, since he certainly was cold and hungry. Elliot followed, as quietly as a dragon can. When he peeked through the window, he saw Lampy, Nora's father, tending the light that warned the ships and kept them from running up on the reef. Elliot also saw Nora feeding Pete clam chowder. And then she tucked him into bed, just as a mother would do. And there it shows Lampy, Nora's father, working on the lamp high up in that lighthouse so that ships can see far out to sea so they don't have an accident on the reef and get all torn up and have a shipwreck. The next day, Nora bought Pete some new clothes. He came and showed his new suit to Elliot, who thought he looked grand. His old clothes were so ragged you could hardly call them clothes at all. The day after that, Nora took Pete to school. Elliot thought this was a perfectly good idea, since only dragons are born knowing everything they might ever need to know. "Nora's just a fine person," thought Elliot one day, when he and Pete were on the beach. "She's exactly the sort of woman Pete should have for a mother. But why does she look so sad?" As he talked to Elliot, Pete mentioned that Nora was waiting for her sweetheart, a man named Paul, who had sailed away many months ago. "His ship sank," said Pete. "Lampy says he's dead, but Nora's sure he's alive and that he will come back to her one day." "Aha," Elliot thought, "I wonder what I can do to help." Certain that Pete would behave himself, be kind to Nora, and help Lampy tend the lighthouse, Elliot disappeared. Pete didn't mind. He was used to it. What he didn't know was that Elliot was gone, really gone, from the cave near the sea and the little town of Passamaquoddy. Elliot had to find Paul. Elliot did find Paul, and quite easily, too, since dragons can do things that people wouldn't even dream of. Paul was in a hospital, far, far away. He'd had a nasty bump on the head when his ship went down, and he couldn't remember anything about Nora or Lampy or the lighthouse. He could not even remember his name. If a bump on the head did that to him, thought Elliot, no doubt another bump will set him right. And so Elliot tipped over Paul's bed, and Paul came tumbling out. Just as Elliot had planned, Paul bumped his head exactly hard enough, but not too hard. "By golly," Paul cried, "now I remember. I'm Paul, and Nora is waiting for me. I must be very late." With that, he got dressed, and he rushed out of the hospital, looking for a ship that would carry him back to Nora. Elliot was proud of himself. Off he flew to Passamaquoddy to tell Pete that Paul would soon be home. But when he arrived, a surprise awaited him. Pete wasn't at the lighthouse. He wasn't in the cave either. Where could he be, the dragon wondered. As Elliot raced along the beach, searching high and low, he seemed to hear Pete calling. Elliot followed his voice into town. And who should be there but the mean old Gogans? They had put Pete into a sack and were hauling him away in a wagon. Well, Pete was Elliot's boy now, and Elliot was Pete's very own dragon. And was Elliot going to stand for that? No, indeed. Elliot stopped worrying about upsetting people. He became visible, and he charged at the Gogans, breathing fire and spreading clouds of smoke across the town. He roared like the hurricane that was blowing in from the sea. The people tumbled over one another as they ran to get out of the way, and the Gogans went flying head over heels out of their wagon and, one by one, into the barrel of tar. When they pulled themselves out, they ran out of town and never came back. And there they're getting out of this big barrel of tar, all covered in it themselves, and just from head to toe. No sooner had Elliot rescued Pete than another danger appeared. The light! The light! Shouted the mayor in town. The light in the lighthouse is out. It was true, and Elliot knew that out on the dark and stormy ocean was the ship that was carrying Paul home to Nora. It would surely run into the rocks unless someone lit that lamp again. Elliot quickly flew to the lighthouse and blew his fiery breath at the big lamp in the tower. The light flared brightly, and Paul's ship steered clear of the reefs and came safely into the harbor. There was hugging and kissing and shouting and cheering, and the largest cheers were for Elliot, the dragon, the greatest dragon, visible or invisible, ever to come into Passamaquoddy. Elliot felt quite pleased with himself. Pete would be safe at the lighthouse with Nora and Paul. And whenever Elliot wanted to visit him, he could, because now the people of Passamaquoddy understood about dragons. And there are all the townspeople and Nora and Paul and Pete. And there in the middle is Elliot the dragon, and everyone is really laughing and smiling and clapping their hands for Elliot the dragon. This is a story called The Frog Prince. Once upon a time, you could always find the princess alone, playing with her golden ball by the pond on the castle grounds. One day she missed her catch, and the ball landed in the pond and sank. The princess didn't want to wade in to get her ball. She didn't want to get wet, so she began to cry. A small green frog asked, "What will you give me if I get the ball for you?" "You can have anything you want," she said. "What I want is simply to be your friend. I want to sit with you at supper and eat from your plate. I want to listen as you read aloud from a book, and to sleep on your pillow after you kiss me goodnight." Well, the princess was sure that her father, the king, would not welcome a warty old frog to dinner, but she promised anyway. As soon as the frog brought her the golden ball, the princess skipped away from the palace to the palace, ignoring the frog's ribbity cries to wait for him. By dinner time, the frog had hopped all the way to the castle, where he called out for the princess. "What would a frog want with you?" the king asked his daughter. And so the princess told him that she'd promised the frog to be his friend if only he would return that golden ball to her. "Well, a promise made must be kept," said the king. And so the frog joined the royal family for dinner. He ate from the young princess's plate and drank from her cup. After dinner, the princess read to him from her storybook. Much to the princess's surprise, The frog was good company, and they passed a pleasant evening together. At bedtime, the princess carried the frog up the stairs and set him on her pillow. But she had no wish to share her pillow with a frog, even a very nice frog, and so she said, "You may sleep on my pillow. I will be glad to sleep here on the floor." So she kissed him on his knobby head and said, "Good night, my dear froggy." At that instant, the frog turned into a handsome prince. The princess could not believe her eyes. But the prince explained that a witch had put a spell on him, and the princess was the first to break it with a kiss. And now they could play and talk for hours and hours, and they grew to be very fond of each other. Best of all, the princess had someone to play with, and they never tired of tossing each other the golden ball that had brought them together. And now we're going to finish up with some old poems called nursery rhymes. Kids have been singing these poems for many hundreds of years. The first one is, "Sing a song of sixpence, a pocket full of rye, 4 and 20 blackbirds baked into a pie. When the pie was opened, the birds began to sing." Now, wasn't that a dainty dish to set before a king? And there are the birds popping out of this pie. The king was in his counting house, counting out his money. The queen was in her parlor, eating bread and honey. The maid was in the garden, hanging out the clothes, when down came a blackbird and snapped off her nose. Uh-oh. Next one is, "Rub-a-dub-dub, three men in a tub. And who do you think they be? The butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, and all of them gone to sea." And there these are guys are in a barrel, floating on the sea, somewhere in the ocean. The next one is another one that I really like. It's sort of silly. "Jack Sprat could eat no fat. His wife could eat no lean. And so, between the both of them, they licked their platter clean. And there was Jack Sprat, a tall and very skinny man, and his wife was a little bit shorter and sort of round and plump, and there they are enjoying their dinner." And we run out of time for today's episode of Read to Succeed. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Janice Peary, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Bye for now.